It's Tuesday, September 16th, 2008, and it's only 30 more days to register for
NormalCon 2008. It's Normal's 37th annual national conference, Friday, October 17th through Sunday, October 19th, at the DoubleTree Hotel and Executive Meeting Center, Berkeley Marina, in Berkeley, California. Register now for the conference. Early registrations get special discount pricing. Don't delay. We have negotiated a special rate for rooms that are sure to sell out fast. The theme of the convention is, It's Not Your Parents' Prohibition. Over the first 2 days, you'll learn more than you thought you could know about marijuana law reform in our plenary and breakout sessions, which include how the media lie about cannabis, growing up and raising children in the age of legal medical pot, politics 2008, pot culture, the politics of marijuana and health. War on pot is a war on young people. What if we arrested 20 million Americans and nobody noticed?
Featuring the top experts in marijuana law reform from Normal and other cannabis-centered organizations. On Sunday, Oaksterdam University presents a look at California's medical marijuana dispensary businesses.
But it's not all work and no play. NormalCon 2008 also presents social gatherings and entertainment in the evenings so activists and attendees can network. It's 3 days of the best marijuana conference in the world with the largest, most popular marijuana organization in the world. Join us October 17th through 19th for the Normal National Conference in Berkeley, California. Sign up online today at norml.org.
It's gotta be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. We've got a great Daily Audio Stash podcast for you today. Thank you for downloading it. You won't be disappointed. Today, Normal's Deputy Director Paul Armentano appeared as a guest on the Dr. Drew Pinsky radio show. You may remember Dr. Drew from Loveline and from Celebrity Rehab. In part one of the interview, Dr. Drew speaks with Paul Armentano about the record number of marijuana arrests just announced by the FBI. Tomorrow we'll play part two of the interview. Also, I've unpacked some audio from the Portland Hemp Stock. This is a legal panel at the Hemposium featuring John Lucy, a Normal Legal Committee member, Paul Loney, the legal counsel for Oregon Normal, and Keith Strop, the founder and legal counsel of National Normal. You'll enjoy this presentation, which takes questions from the audience and discusses, among other topics, driving under the influence laws, so stay tuned for that. Also, don't forget we're running our new Pass the Stash contest. We're still looking for marijuana unicorns. If you're a marijuana unicorn, listen up right after the hemp headlines for more details on how you could win free stuff from Normal. All right, folks, let's get right into it. Sit back with your hash pipe and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Dutch court allows cannabis cultivation for therapeutic use. The Hague, Netherlands. The Dutch Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld a landmark appeal court ruling that made it legal for a patient with multiple sclerosis to grow cannabis for therapeutic use. Upholding the 2006 ruling, the higher court said that exceptional circumstances meant an illegal scheme can be justified when committed out of necessity. Quote, the state of necessity is established, end quote. The judgment follows a decision by the public prosecutor's office to challenge the appeal court's ruling, which allowed MS sufferer Wim Moerlag and his wife Klesenia Hulgers to grow cannabis in order to alleviate his symptoms. According to the Dutch government, the ruling set a precedent which endangered the country's tolerant policy on cannabis use. The sale and consumption of small quantities of the drug are permitted in licensed coffee shops. The MS sufferer, who requires 3 grams of cannabis per day, earlier told the authorities he was compelled to produce his own cannabis. Cannabis purchased in coffee shops, he said, could contain fungi and bacteria, especially harmful to MS sufferers. After the 2006 Court of Appeal ruling, Moerlag's lawyer said the judgment meant that other patients, such as people with AIDS, could also legally grow their own cannabis. Dutch citizens can legally purchase up to 5 grams of cannabis per day and be in possession of up to 30 grams for their own personal use without being prosecuted. Growing or selling cannabis, however, is illegal.
What about the children? Won't somebody think of the children? What kind of message does this send to the little Dutch children when you allow MS and AIDS patients to grow their own marijuana and allow adults to keep an ounce and buy and smoke marijuana in coffee shops? Don't you know that if you don't arrest hundreds of thousands of these dope fiends every year, your country will descend into crime, corruption, catastrophe, and chaos?
Well, the message the kids seem to have gotten is don't smoke pot. The Netherlands has half the rate of teen marijuana use as we do. And murder, assault, and robbery rates are lower than the United States, and Holland seems like a pretty peaceful place from what I read. Good for them to allow medical users to grow. Kansas City cops' outdoor surveillance leads pot growers indoors. A lone man enters a grove of giant marijuana plants, yanks them out, and stacks his harvest. But a camera hidden near the illicit field caught it all. These days, even the ground can have eyes as police and pot growers engage in a high-tech battle. Police on both sides of the state line use covert cameras to watch outdoor fields and arrest growers. Marijuana growers in some states battle the cameras by wearing identity-hiding masks as they work their fields. Some even install their own cameras. It's a fight that's going on nationwide. The U.S. Forest Service this year even bought 2 drone planes to find pot fields in California forests. The Kansas Bureau of Investigation started using a few cameras in 1995 to watch fields, and now has about a dozen of them, says Jeffrey Brandau, a KBI special agent in charge. Thanks largely to the cameras, Brandau said, quote, now it's hard to find any outdoor groves. It's like they disappeared, end quote. In 2000, Kansas police confiscated 2,795 cultivated outdoor plants. Last year, they found 1,674. And from January 1st to August 31st of this year, they recorded only 8 such plants confiscated statewide, KBI numbers show. Police think the bad guys have responded to their field cameras and market forces by moving indoors and growing far stronger pot. Now, as police turn their attention and high-tech tools to those indoor marijuana growing operations, some growers are using increasingly sophisticated means to dodge them.
So, your efforts to enforce marijuana prohibition have led to more potent marijuana? Thank you?
The cops close down the border, so the marijuana grows move to the national parks. The cops plant cameras to watch us in the wilderness, so the marijuana grows move indoors to suburban homes. The cops use power monitoring to detect indoor grows,
So the growers steal power or use generators. The cops use thermal imaging to detect indoor grows, so the growers insulate houses and dig deep basements. A big arms race between cops and growers. And over that whole period of time, marijuana gets more potent, there's more of it around, and the price stays relatively stable and artificially high. Cops get jobs and shiny new toys, growers get big profits, and everybody who wants to get high is getting high with the best weed ever grown. Who's winning this drug war, anyway? Sometimes I like to throw a drug warrior this question. Suppose you had a magic wand and suddenly marijuana no longer exists. How does that make the world a better place? Do you believe there would be less heroin addicts? Do you believe drug-related crime would just disappear? Do you think suddenly workplace productivity would go up? Do you think SAT scores would rise? What is the problem you think you're trying to solve by eradicating marijuana? Remember, this isn't just about stopping you from smoking weed. This is also about wiping a plant species off the face of the earth. Calculated, premeditated extinction. Aside from bugs like, I don't know, polio, I can't think of any government in history that has ever before enacted a policy for the purposeful extinction of a species. Lodi man severely burned while extracting oil from marijuana. From recordnet.com. A 35-year-old man set himself ablaze, both externally and internally, while attempting to extrapolate oil from marijuana in a Lodi apartment Monday night, Lodi police said. George Elhard is in critical condition at the University of California Davis Medical Center in Sacramento after his body was set ablaze at 9 p.m. Monday, Lodi police reported. Officer Dale Eubank said Elhard put marijuana in a sock and pushed it into a piece of PVC pipe. He then poured butane into the pipe and let it filter through the sock in order to extrapolate tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, from the cannabis. THC is marijuana's active chemical. The butane fumes were so heavy, a nearby water heater ignited, Eubank said. A flash fire quickly set Elhard ablaze. He also breathed in the butane's fumes, allowing the flames to encompass his lungs. Eubank said, quote, "There are lots of ways to extrapolate the oil from marijuana. This happened in a contained space, and the butane fumes just filled the bathroom," end quote. The top three Google results I received for hash oil extraction brought me to similar pages with instructions that were written in 1999. At the top of each was a very prominent warning that the technique should be done outdoors or at a minimum with strong airflow from fans and lots of open doors and windows. They even caution against having your cell phone on, since it can cause enough of a spark to set a pool of butane ablaze. It's really a shame that this happened, and I hope Elhard recovers. While he didn't exercise the greatest caution in extracting hash, he wouldn't have done it if he could have bought a little vial of it at his local liquor store. You don't read too many stories these days about guys getting third-degree burns from exploding moonshine stills. Personally, I'm more of a natural kind of guy. I left behind drugs that had anything to do with solvents back in the 90s. That's why I prefer bubble hash. Water, ice, bucket, drill with a paint stirring attachment, a set of bags, and a couple of friends can turn any night into bubble hash night.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
U.S. drug czar John Walters doesn't believe anybody is in jail for marijuana possession.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn.
But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. It was green.
Are you one of the drug czar's unicorns? Did you serve time for a first-time nonviolent marijuana possession charge? Tell us your story, and you could win big.
The loveliest of all was the unicorn.
You can remain anonymous, and if we use your story on the podcast,
You'll win a copy of the DVD Totally Baked, autographed by AC/DC's lead singer Brian Johnson, as well as excellent Normal swag like stickers and posters, and a steak dinner from Drug Czar John Walters. Steak dinner depends on whether the Drug Czar keeps his word, which isn't very likely.
We didn't arrest 800,000 marijuana users. That's the same lie I just talked to your colleague back there about.
Send us your email, I am a marijuana unicorn, to stash@normal.org today. Contest ends Friday, October 10th, 2008.
Don't you forget my unicorn.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states, and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws.
Body dies, the ego cries, the Thursday scene.
If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
The afternoon pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny?
He is the senior policy analyst at Normal. Paul?
Yes. Hi.
Hey, thanks for joining me. Very well. Thanks for joining me again. A couple things. You wanted to bring up the latest tally on pot arrests, which is really very interesting, that they're at an all-time high. But just before the microphones heated up, Bob Forrest made an interesting comment to me. Say that again to Paul.
Well, the argument against pot has always been that it's a gateway drug and all this kind of stuff. But nowadays, the young people, last 10 years that I've noticed, the gateway drug is prescription drugs. They get it out of their parents' medicine cabinet, and they're off and running on opiates right off the bat. And the pot's hard to get. Benzos and opiates, and pot's hard to get. You have to know somebody and all this kind of stuff, but it's right in your parents' medicine cabinet. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing prescription drug addicts 20 years old who've never smoked pot.
Well, I would agree that prescription drug abuse is a serious issue, and I would certainly like to see some of our focus when it comes as a national discussion on drug policy to be on this subject. I think there is finally beginning to be some dialogue and some education toward young people about prescription drug abuse, about practices like farming, and I think it is certainly about time that we have this discussion, because I do think you're correct that a lot of young people are unaware of the potential dangers and the dependence issues associated with the use of these prescription drugs. Unfortunately, we have a national policy that, in my opinion, spends far too much time talking about and exaggerating the potential harms of marijuana and downplaying the potential health risks of many other substances, including legal ones like prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going to point out the tally recently on the number of drug arrests, I guess it was this year?
Sure. The FBI just yesterday put out their annual uniform crime report, and that collects arrest data for the previous year. And what it reported, you know, sadly, in my opinion, was that in 2007, law enforcement arrested a record 872,000 Americans on marijuana charges. And 90% of those arrested, or about 775,000 Americans, were charged with simple possession of marijuana, not cultivation, not trafficking, not sales, but they simply had a small amount of marijuana on them. You know, in this country, we're currently now, every 37 seconds, arresting someone for violating marijuana laws, and I think that's a tremendous waste of prosecutorial resources, it's a waste of law enforcement resources, and I'm really worried about the psychological effect, frankly, that it has on young people, because of those arrested, 75% are under age 30. We now have an entire generation that's becoming disenfranchised, that's believing that its civic leaders and that police are not their protectors, but actually their oppressors. And when you look at the data, they are.
And think of the tax revenue they could have recouped had they legalized pot and regulated it. Well, it's an interesting topic. Bob, you've been sober how long now?
12 years.
Do you think having a drug being illegal, prohibition per se, helped you come to terms with addiction and or help you with patients?
Well, the idea is you have to have a consequence, and we have these families who want to, exactly what he said, you have a 20-year-old kid that gets arrested for drugs, what do the parents do? They pay to get him out of the trouble and then into treatment, and so that does motivate for a positive direction.
So having laws there does help.
The idea is how...
Did it help you?
Well... You know, here's the simplest way to put it. Addicts in the really heavy illicit drugs, cocaine, heroin, crystal meth that I was taking, they have criminal behaviors in order to get the drugs. They should be, in my opinion, held accountable for the behavior, not excused from the behavior to go to drug treatment. That's what alternative sentencing is.
But not illegalize the drug use.
Yes, but the idea is that, you know, marijuana is a different category of drug, and you know, that's what I've always thought. I don't know.
How do you see it now when our patients come in addicted to it and they can't stop it?
I see it more as a family problem. I don't see addiction as just the individual. The family is a huge portion of the problem. And so you tell a late baby boomer that their 20-year-old kid is addicted to marijuana, and that's why they're not going to school, and that's why they're not doing this and not doing that. And they see it as an extension of themselves, and so they want it dealt with right away so we can get back on track to succeed, my child succeed the way he wants to. Yeah. So it's more complicated.
Keep in mind, too, when we're talking about young people using marijuana, or we're talking about young people using marijuana in an unhealthy manner, oftentimes that is, as I'm sure Dr. Drew would tell you as well, that is symptomatic of much more and greater underlying problems.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And unless you address those underlying problems, that person is never going to have a healthy relationship with intoxicants, whether it's marijuana or legal intoxicants.
Well, that's what recovery is, though. Unfortunately, you have to treat the addictive disease they trigger first before you can get at some of that heavier stuff. So yes, indeed, it does have to be dealt with, but each in its sequential time. But it's an interesting topic. I mean, I think what I heard Bob say, and I think you would agree, I suspect, Mr. Armentano, that you would hold people accountable for the behaviors, not for the use, right?
Of course I would. Keep in mind, though, that, you know, some of the criminal behavior that people engage in when they have issues with harder drugs, oftentimes that criminal behavior is also a result of the criminal prohibition of the drug. You don't tend to have people committing street violence and crimes because they're trying to cop money to buy cigarettes or alcohol.
Is there a larger...
You do see that violence associated with cocaine, methamphetamine, and certain other drugs.
Well, but you did with alcohol when alcohol was prohibited.
Course, my point exactly. And I would also add that as a national policy, we do not throw adults in jail because they have problems with their private use of alcohol. We encourage them to seek treatment. So I do not think it makes sense to try and arrest and use the threat of incarceration over individuals who may or may not have problems with their private use of marijuana. It's just an inconsistent policy.
Should we revisit the Harrison Narcotic Act of whatever it was, 1914?
Well, we would need to revisit the 1970 Controlled Substances Act at this point, but certainly your point is well taken. I think we should certainly revisit those laws.
But we're talking in a day and age where we should start looking at the Patriot Act first, shouldn't we?
Please, I mean, getting off topic.
No, but the idea is that here we are having the same discussion that was had in the 70s and 80s and 90s about marijuana in a much more liberal time. Now we're living in the most conservative time in America, in the America that I've lived in. This is a more conservative time than Reagan or Nixon. And but you're still going to talk about legalization of marijuana at the federal level. It's not going to happen. It's only going to happen at a state level.
I'm super duper moderate on pretty much everything. And so here's my sort of moderate opinion. I've met the drug czar, and he's actually a reasonable guy. He's actually, you can have a conversation with him. He's not close.
I can't have a conversation.
I think you guys raise each other's defenses. I maybe come at him differently, but he's actually reason. You can have a conversation. He doesn't reject any point of view. He just has his own way of doing it under the circumstances. And the point I was going to make was, and that we have to go to break, and Paul, we're going to come back with you and talk about the presidential candidates and their view on these issues, if you'll stay with us.
Okay.
But that the reality is, Bob, you one time said to me, you know what, until these guys are threatened with jail, meaning our patients, or death, they don't
and
get
I'm
better.
And I'm talking about the behaviors that they do, Drew, not the drugs
not the
and
use.
Alcohol.
Well, most of them go to jail because of using, not because of the stuff they do so much. You think about it, think of our recent experience with people, that's what got them. They got busted with heroin or whatever. I'm just saying, I don't know the answer to this.
Neither
but it may be a moot point because the behaviors will eventually get severe with all these guys.
Think we're talking about pot, though. That's what I thought.
I know we are. We got to take a break.
Let's
Paul Armentano from Normal in here. We're going to talk about the presidential candidates. Who's for pot? Who's against it? Or are they both against it? Or both for it? We'll find out after we get back from this.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, executive director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. On today's Stash, we get a little nerdcore hip-hop from MC Frontalot. This is what happens when you allow nerds to have too much time with computers and electronic instruments. Frontalot's been covered in Newsweek, Wired Magazine, and the UK Independent, according to his web bio. MC Frontalot was born Malcolm Colby Frontovich in a Kansas storm cellar in 1973. The fronting has increased exponentially since.
10 years of rap stardom, 14 world tours, and 27 platinum albums find MC Frontalot threatening retirement. His legion of fans will sob quietly to themselves. Well, this guy's got a great sense of humor, judging by the rest of the Q&A in his fact section. A Stash listener named Max turned me on to MC Frontalot by forwarding to me this song, Mountain Kind, from his well-stocked MP3 download section. Check out our blog at stash.normal.org and you can get the links to MC Frontalot's website. MC Frontalot's new album is called Secrets from the Future and is also available at his website, frontalot.com. It's the Revenge of the Nerds with MC Frontalot and Mountain Kind.
Yo, front, you got a mag?
Mag's cash, man. I mean, actually, I quit.
What? You're front.
No, I quit.
You're saying if I took out a fatty right now, you wouldn't spark it.
That's right. Damn, I'm impressed that you rolled a whole Z of Mexican brickweed into 1J, but I'm not tempted.
Nah, I don't smoke no brickweed, man. This is Mountain Kind right here.
For real? You got a light? I shout not. Front a little, cause I'm front a lot. I climbed Mount Sinai, got high at the top. I blew the cloud straight up, and the voice that I heard said,
you were born to front.
I said, word. Stumble on back down, two tabs in my hand. Chisel middle on the one that said, don't be bad. And on the other one, written, be as bad as you like. That one under the tongue, and then I'll grapple the mic. All right, hear ye, hear ye. I have here some commandments. Number one is, you better make me a sandwich. Second up, God says, I'm in charge. Word from on high, front a lot off to live large. It's the dawn of the age of the MC front. You're melting down that calf, I'ma gild my butt. I'ma gild the mic, I'ma gild my tongue. Or I would if it hadn't already been done. Damn, I gotta quit smoking. It's insane.
Well, every goddamn time that I get this high, I feel like I'm gonna hit my head on the sky. And I try to leave it alone, but I can't. You're the mountain kind, what they call the plant.
I'm suffering delusions of grandeur.
Up on top of Mount Olympus, I was just in a fall. Said your beats is short and your words is tall. With your molehill rapping, some gall you got. Made attempt to step to in front a lot. I shot. Players in the air, Zeus said, don't do it. I'm messing with the old school now. And chewing, going blue in the face. I drop bass, drop rhymes so thick that they take up space. Ways and means to an end. I'm in need of a Sherpa when I smoke this blend. Ascend, spark it up like the sun. Lose a digit or two off of my IQ before I'm done. Unconscionable, this habit. Better quit before it's
too late, Dagnabbit.
Every time that I climb my ass back down, then I'm done. Till the mountain come looming back around.
Pound for pound, you know the sound.
Well, every goddamn time that I get this high, I feel like I'm gonna hit my head on the sky. And I try to leave it alone, but I can't. You're the mountain kind, what they call the plant. Every goddamn time that I get this high, I feel like I'm gonna hit my head on the sky. And I try to leave it alone, but I can't. You're the mountain kind, what they call the plant.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 420 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
This is John Lucy, a local Portland attorney, very good attorney here in town. One of the issues that Paul talked about was the OCTA and making marijuana legal for Oregon residents, regardless of use. But one of the things that OCTA is not going to change is our driving laws. And in the state of Oregon, you can get a controlled substance DUI, DUII, driving under the influence of intoxicants, if you've used any controlled substance within a certain period of time that affects your ability to drive. And with marijuana, this is often becoming an issue because the way in which they test your controlled substance DUIs in Oregon is generally not through a blood test unless you're involved in a traffic accident, but rather through a urine test. So patients oftentimes who may have smoked even a week before, who get a controlled substance doing or ask to take field sobriety tests and fail just because, say, they're sleepy or they have some other issue going on that's not related to their cannabis use, the cannabis metabolites are going to show up in their urine. And a lot of times these patients get prosecuted. And so one of the things you have to be really careful with is to make sure that if you are going to use marijuana and you do drive, and not everyone in Oregon does drive, a lot of people in Portland take public transit, but if you... public transit. You can get a controlled substance duty on a bike, though, in Oregon. Be aware of that. Just driving your bicycle around, you can get a DUI. We're a state that does allow that. You can also get a DUI in a boat in Oregon. So you're not safe just because you're intoxicated on a bike. You can hurt someone pretty badly on a bike, actually. That's true. We, to a certain extent, have an intoxication in public law. It varies from city to city, and there's different ordinances on that issue. But what I really want to address is people need to be careful if they're going to be a patient and they're going to drive. Particularly, I would advise patients, don't smoke in your car. If you do smoke in your car, you run the risk of an officer smelling that you've smoked in your car and assuming that you're intoxicated at that point. And in Oregon, you don't have to be intoxicated, an incredible amount. You just have to be intoxicated to a perceptible degree. So if you're intoxicated in any way whatsoever that affects your judgment, your ability to drive, your ability to function, your coordination, you can be convicted of a DUI. The first time, you're often offered diversion if you don't have a commercial driver's license, but that's a one-year program. And unless you have an attorney and a sympathetic district attorney who's willing to work on that bargain with a sympathetic judge, you oftentimes won't be allowed to use your medicine while on probation. And so you'll be forced to give up your medicine for that period of time, either a year for diversion or however long you get sentenced to on probation. And so that's a big concern for a lot of patients. They really do need to be careful. If there's any issues, questions, I'd be happy to answer those. If they're too specific, I'd ask that we take them afterwards, just because I can't go into so specific a detail here.
If the laws get changed for the positive use of marijuana, how will that affect all the people that are locked up, right? The thousands of people, they've already been charged, so it won't make a difference, or will it?
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately not, unless those people are specifically released early, otherwise pardoned, or otherwise released on some other sort of measure, you're not going to see those people being released. Just because the law changes, the way our legal system works, if you broke the law at a certain point, even if the law later changes, you still have to serve the time on that sentence as it was at the time that you broke the law. Now, certainly, in certain cases, when terrible laws change, oftentimes people who are currently in jail for marijuana crimes would stay in jail unless pardoned or otherwise had their sentence shortened by the governor, in Oregon specifically, or they were released early through a program done by the Department of Corrections. We have plenty of prisoners in Oregon who are in on crimes that have much longer sentences than people currently in on crimes, but we don't go back in time unless the governor steps in, generally. And the current governor has stepped in, I think, a total sum of 6 times for a pardon in his entire term in office. He's pardoned less people than, I think, almost any other governor we've ever had.
I would just add on to a little bit is, maybe John may not agree with my advice, might disagree with me, it's fine. But if you are pulled over by an officer, and I recommend never saying a word to the officer. If you ever watch the Busted video, it makes so much sense. Just, hand the officer your driver's license and your registration, proof of insurance. And don't answer. They'll try and get you engaged in conversation. You don't have to. It might make them a little grumpy, but so what? Then they can't write something in their report that, he appeared to be slurring his words, that kind of thing. So it's just, here you go, yes sir, no sir. And then if it comes up somehow about being a patient, just say, I'm a medical marijuana patient, here's my card, nothing else. If they ask when's the last time medicated, you don't have to answer that question. Most people will get so afraid, well, I answer that question. Don't answer that question. Well, I would say no response. I just hand them a card. I wouldn't, just no response to the officer, then say, officer, am I under arrest? If you get to the point where he's going to answer my question, say, officer, am I under arrest? Then I'll put him on a spot, because we start asking them questions, it turns the tables, but you have to be really good at that, so I don't recommend doing that part. So just staying quiet. So
The only thing I would probably add to what Paul said was, and I agree for the most part, the only thing I would add is if you're asked to consent to a search or you're asked if you want to speak with your attorney, don't consent to any searches. Say, I don't consent to a search. And yes, ask to speak to an attorney. Even if you don't know an attorney, when you get to the police station, ask for a phone book. Find somebody in the phone book to talk to. Simply invoking your right to an attorney can protect you, even if you don't get to speak to an attorney right then.
Okay, any questions? I mean, I have the microphone, so.
Is there a certain amount of hours after medicating that you should wait to operate machinery or drive a car or anything like that?
Well, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not sure if I'd want to.
Is there a legal?
There's no legal definition. The legal definition of DUII is impaired to a perceptible degree. So when people talk about medicating, people medicate in a lot of different ways. I've seen patients who medicate just by putting a little bit of salve on their skin, and they may be fine to drive. It may not affect them in any way whatsoever. They may be fine to drive. I've seen other patients who, due to their condition, have to medicate so often that I would under no circumstances ever advise them to drive. And so it's an individual decision. I will let you know, though, that in various experiences with different police forces, I've had police forces say that people up to 24 hours later were impaired. Now, I don't personally believe that, but that's been the response from the police force. And unfortunately, if the district attorney agrees with them, the prosecution goes forward.
Let me just add, if I could, Paul Armentano on the Normal staff focuses a lot on drug testing and how long you're impaired and all of that sort of thing. Paul suggests that there's a period of a couple of hours after you smoke that if you honest to God want to be on top of your game, that's when you don't want to drive. But it really is only a window of a couple of hours. Now, if you're continuing to smoke, the window keeps stretching out, so you know, you understand. But it's not 24 hours. You're right. Sometimes the government or just some judge or prosecutor suggests there is good science on this. And so if you need, there are experts that can come in and testify that, yes, it elevates your metabolites or your THC for a two-hour period of time, and then it starts down, and it's down very quickly. So whatever impairment you have for that first couple of hours very quickly goes away. If you're 6 or 8 hours later, there's no impairment at all that could be measured. But you got to be careful. I mean, again, they don't need impairment if you give them consent. Most of the people that call the normal office that have been busted, number one, it's because they were smoking while they were driving. So I think, honestly, if we all would somehow agree to quit doing that, to smoke at our house or our friend's house, we'd probably eliminate half the arrests. And the most of those, the cop befriends the person and says, look, I can either go easy or I can go tough. If I know I smell marijuana, so if you want to tell me what you got, you know, it won't be a big deal. And so they say, okay, here's what I have. Well, of course, and they bust their ass and lock them up. No, never give consent. Even if you're clean, don't give consent. Just as an important issue of personal freedom, for Christ's sake, the government only has a right to search your car or your person if they have a search warrant. Otherwise, or if a crime is being committed in their presence. Unfortunately, there are some exceptions. So if they smell the marijuana, that gives them a right in most states to search the passenger part of the car. So, again, my bottom line is if we all quit smoking in the car, we'd cut about 400,000 arrests out a year, I think.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org.
For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from James C. Payne, a former U.S. District Judge, who said, quote, "Alcohol didn't cause the high crime rates of the 20s and 30s, Prohibition did. And drugs do not cause today's alarming crime rates, but drug prohibition does. Trying to wage war on 23 million Americans who are obviously committed to certain recreational activities is not going to be any more successful than prohibition was." End quote. You know, how many times does our society have to learn the lesson? Prohibition does not work. People don't just say no. I'm Radical Russ, just saying yes for over 18 years now, and we'll be seeing you tomorrow on the Daily Audio Stash. Thanks for downloading us, and don't forget to register for NormalCon. You've only got a few days left. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and until that time, take care of each other, tokers.